Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a look at your pet's behavior on the show today. I'm really happy, pleased to have Patricia McConnell back with us. Patricia, of course, certified applied animal behaviorist. She's an international speaker. She's the author of several guides on training and behavior problems. She's written a novel, probably working on another one, I'm betting. And we'll be talking with her about your dog or maybe your cat and its behavior. And it's really great to have her back. Patricia McConnell, welcome back. Thank you for joining us again.
Oh, I just drug myself into the studio, Larry. I didn't really want to be here, especially on your last week before you retire after our 14 years together on Calling All Pets. I would have walked here, Mueller.
I was thinking back to, of course, to Calling All Pets. Even before that, I mean, you, I think, first called about doing a show on a herding dog trial. And I said, well, we can talk about that, but I mean, could you tell us, you know, talk about animal behavior? And you said, oh, sure. And the response was so overwhelming, you became kind of a regular on this show. And then we decided to, I think Jack Mitchell said, you know, you could make that a national show.
And the rest is history. Yeah, it started with me just coming on as a guest to talk for the Wisconsin Working Stock Dog Association about a trial that we had going on. And you got some calls because people, you know, I mentioned I was an animal behaviorist. And it was really fun. And you taught me how to be on radio, which has been a godsend for me for the last gazillion years. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's been great, Larry. I'm going to miss you. I'm going to miss you a whole lot.
What's your favorite? Do you have a favorite memory from that show?
Oh, wow.
There's so many.
I was
trying to think of one.
I don't know why this stands out to me. I have no idea why. But it was, do you remember the guy who called about a bear eating? Larry remembers. So there was a man who called because he had a black bear crawling up a tree and eating the seed out of his bird feeder. And his question to me was, if I peed on the tree trunk, would that stop the bear?
And yeah, he was talking about a ladder, too, to go higher.
Right, that's right. That's right. Yes, if I got a ladder and went higher and peed even higher. Larry and I were laughing so hard. I have no idea what our answers were. But I do remember that well.
Oh, man. Has that show, and I assume it had some impact or effect on your work with individual work with people and their pets. Or did it?
Well, yes, it did. Because here's one of the things I learned about being with you on radio is now I'm going to struggle to actually doing what I'm talking about, but how to say a lot in a short amount of time. And, you know, I've done so many radio interviews for, you know, The Other End of the Leash and my novel, Away to Me, and I've so many podcasts. And so when people ask you a question, I'm always aware that there is a limited amount of time that you have to answer that question. Now, I have to tell you, it's ruined me for television. One, I don't like television. I hate having to worry about my hair. But the problem with television is that their time period that's allowable is like a third or a fourth of the time. So I talk in radio time, and then I can see the TV interviewer's eyes get glassy somewhere when I'm just getting started.
Yeah, it's why I've done some television too, and it's why I like radio so much.
You taught me to love doing radio. I love doing radio, Larry.
One of the things that I've always appreciated about you and your approach was the positive reinforcement.
Yeah, it's, you know, and here's what's ironic, Larry, is the tables are turning a bit. People are, in large numbers, turning back to harsh punishment and got to be dominance over your dog and electric collars and prong collars. I know, it's just a weird world we're living in. And so that's, you know, the tide turns and goes back and forth. So there are a lot of us that are still working really hard to spread the word that positive reinforcement is not spoiling your dog or your cat or your husband or your children. It's influencing people's behavior in a way that maintains your relationship and the bond between you. And what could be more important than that?
Yeah. I remember a gal calling the show and saying, you know, I've been trying your positive behavior approach on my husband. And she said it was working. And then he suddenly realized and said, you know, I see you're applying the same principles to me that you have been to the dog.
Yeah.
But he liked it.
Well, and, here's the irony is that some people will complain about, like, well, you're just manipulating people. Well, how are you not doing that when you use punishment, right? I mean, we're all trying to influence the behavior of people around us. One of my favorite books related to this, I did not write. It was written by a colleague and a friend, Karen London. It's called Treat Everyone Like a Dog. And it's a brilliant book. And it just talks about using the principles that science has taught us about how to influence behavior. Because we're doing that all day long, right? You know, that's what we do. That's what you do when you're a social species. It's not manipulative. It's just trying to live your way through the world, right? So anyway, Treat Everyone Like a Dog is funny. She has great examples of working with her own children. Anyway, it's a really fun book. And so I've done the same thing. I have also thought about, I mean, we all should be thinking about using positive reinforcement, which is another way of basically being kind and thinking about somebody else's wants or needs and seeing if we could give that to them in a way that's a win-win.
Patricia McConnell, our guest today. And if you have a question, maybe something's going on with your dog or cat too.
Or spouse. No, wait, I'm not not a psychologist. I could just talk about basic principles of influencing behavior.
You can join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234. You could email to talk at WPR.org. And now let's take a call. Andrew and Prescott, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Can you guys hear us?
Yes, go ahead.
Cool. So I'm with my wife here. You're on speakerphone. We have two dogs. They're both about 3 years. One's a Beagle Shepherd. The other is a Pyrenees Shepherd mix. And they, about in the fall, late fall, early winter, kind of stopped getting along. Our Beagle Shepherd mix jumps on the Pyrenees Bax mix and just starts attacking her in the car, in the house. She's resource guarding with the other dog. And they were best friends until one day. We have two little kids, and we're just terrified that they're going to get caught in the middle. My wife already did once. She got chomped on her hand.
Mm.
And we don't want to get rid of Clover, the aggressor, but we're starting to run out of ideas.
Oh,
started muscle training, and it's heartbreaking for our family.
I am so sorry. I mean, my heart truly goes out to you, and for people who haven't dealt with this, it is truly heartbreaking because you're trying to protect and take care of all these helpless individuals, your children first and foremost, right? But also these helpless, vulnerable dogs that you consider to be very much in a way part of your family. So I absolutely would bring in a professional without question. The Animal Behavior Society has a list of certified applied animal behaviorists. So just go to animalbehaviorsociety.org. And then go to Applied Behavior. They have a list of behaviorists. Here's one thing. So I can't fix it for you now, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can't spend 3 minutes and make everything go away. But here's, I think, the most important thing I can tell you right now is that not only are you and your family living in an incredibly difficult, painful, sort of heartbreaking, stressful situation, so are your dogs. And so rehoming one, in a way, very well might be the kindest thing you can do, as hard as it would be. So it might be that your Beagle Shepherd mix, and by the way, the reason probably, and I'm just guessing, but probably this came on last fall, is you're talking about age and maturity. You know, puppies are not the same as adults, and I don't know if these are both males, but either way, I don't know if anybody's spayed or neutered, but I would absolutely, I would reach out to a professional who uses positive reinforcement, but also has experience with serious aggression, and I would seriously just start thinking about, as hard as it would be in our dog's best interest to separate them, because they are not living a relaxed life either.
Neither one of them. Either one of them.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Andrew, thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. David in New Richmond, we'll give you a chance. David, hi.
Hey, wanted to, don't know if it's appropriate to comment on the previous show. It was on, you know, the importance of dogs in our lives, which I thought was very timely for your show.
It was quite, quite a lead into the show, actually.
Yes. I thought it was super. And what I wanted to say that I was hoping they would say on that show, a lot of people expressed how unique and special, which they all are. But I would please let people remember there's always a dog that needs a good home. And as much as it will pain you losing a dog, even these people that we're talking about, there are people that will take dogs. God bless them. But for people who have lost their dog, please remember there's always a dog out there that needs a good home. And the window of will be very small compared to the windows of happiness that you get from them. So that's all.
David, thank you so much.
Excellent wisdom. Thank you, David.
And he's exactly right. He's exactly right. David, again, thanks. Mark in Wisconsin Dells, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Thank you. Hey,
oh, we lost you, Mark. I'm sorry. Maybe you could try to call again, but your phone just isn't working at the moment. You might be driving through something. Carol in Middleton, we'll go to you. Hi, Carol.
Hi, I'm going to start out by thanking Patricia because she has been the foundation of all my more or less successful training of our last three dogs. And then the dog that we have now, we got it 5 months, which is the first time we haven't gotten a puppy. And I did need to use the people who you trained and have followed you that are with Dog's Best Friend because he really needed a certified animal behaviorist. He really had some issues with he was afraid of people and dogs when we first got him. He was pretty reactive, and he's just great. He's almost 2 years
old
now. A Springer Spaniel, but you're ready for this, right? There's a but.
There's always a but.
He's so tuned in, especially to my emotions, that if I even get emotion, if I get upset over a frustration over a computer problem or something, he wants to jump on me or jump on my husband. And I've tried that, you know, settled person, you know, actually getting him aroused playfully. And then, but this is a whole different thing. That umbilical cord needs to be a lot longer.
Yeah.
Could you and I join a therapy group together? Because I have a dog, my younger, although he's 9 and a half, but Skip is an empath, and he doesn't jump on me. But if I get upset or I'm like, you know, exclaiming something great about a sports game on TV or something, he comes over and he lays against me and he puts his head by me and he looks at me like, oh.
I'm sorry.
Oh, and we would all like to think it's because he's so kind and dear, and I do think he is. But I also think that emotional arousal upsets him. So rather than coming to soothe me, I think he's coming to me for me to soothe him. It's like, you're upset, and that's contagious. So one of the things he's doing for me is reminding me to do some, you know, careful breathing before I get, before I exclaim too much, you know, two sniffs and then a long exhale, right? Really, really good. But the other thing you might want to do, and this would take some more time, is to set it up sort of as a training exercise. So pretend to be upset at your computer, just a little bit, you know, not a lot. And then let me ask you, if you're still on, is he a toy-oriented dog? Does he love toys? It's a Springer, right?
More food. He's more food motivated, but I could find a toy. I'm doing agility with him, and okay. I have one of those lotus balls with treats in them. So
sure.
They're sort of
there you go. Treat, so you know what you might want to do. You're sort of gonna just classically condition him to a different reaction. So you go like, oh no. And then you toss that treat behind you as he comes towards you. And he's like, oh, wait, what's that? Squirrel? What food? What toy? What? And so you just start doing that a couple times a day, maybe 3-4 times, you know, like think of it like working out, you know, do like 3 to 5 reps, you know, like three sets a day. And just and start really, really quietly and then sort of work your way up. And that has, I would give it a 70% chance of working. So
that's
give that
pretty,
one a try first.
That's pretty darn good.
It's not too bad.
Not too
about
bad,
100,
Carol.
But it's not too bad.
Good luck. Appreciate your call. Patricia McConnell, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today for WPR News. Larry Mueller here with my great guest, Patricia McConnell, our certified applied animal behaviorist. And you can catch her online, too. You got a nice place to go. There's a spot that you can go that a lot of people go to.
I just happen to have a website. I just do, and it's easy to go to, patriciamcconnell.com. And you can, there's a learning center that has lots of articles, essays, videos about dealing with behavioral problems. There's my, you can go to my blog from there. And there's also, there's a whole shop page where you can buy my new novel, Away to Me, or you can buy a book on fearful dogs called The Cautious Canine. So there's a whole world in there. So jump in
and enjoy. It's a great site. Somebody approached me the other day and said, oh, you're going to have Patricia McConnell on the show. I saw that on her site. I said, yes, indeed. I couldn't go away from this show without having you on one more time.
I would have
sure.
I would have walked in here and, like, you know, just taken over the room. Just.
Oh, man. Well, Kate in Greenleaf has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Kate.
Thank you very much. My question is not with dogs, but with a cat. She refuses to use a litter box most of the time to urinate. She will poop in the litter box, jump out, and pee on the floor. I've gotten to the point where I keep puppy pee pads near the litter box. I have one taped up to the wall because she is a sprayer. She will also spray, and she always does it in those two spots. Except last Friday, I had my grandchildren for the day. After they left, I sat and I brought her in to sit on my lap, and she raised her tail and she sprayed me.
Oh my goodness!
I don't know what to do with her anymore. She's 8 years old. She's always been a little bugger when it comes to urinating, but we kind of keep her confined to one huge gathering room, but I have to keep everything covered with pee pads.
Oh, my goodness.
Well,
wow.
So I don't know what to do. I've tried the fluoxetine.
Okay.
But it turned her into a zombie. I mean, a total zombie.
Yeah,
and
okay.
And she still peed inappropriately.
Okay. I'll tell you, every veterinarian I know, which are a lot, would say, please send her to me. The fact that she's spraying I would be curious, one, just about her health related to her bladder and her elimination system. I would be curious about her hormones. What is going on there? So a vet behaviorist, again, animalbehaviorsociety.org, go to the applied list of applied animal behaviorists. There's also the American Veterinary, the American Veterinary Association, I think AVMA, that's what I'm trying to think of. They also have applied veterinary behaviorists. And frankly, that is where I would send you. They often do consults over the phone, but they would probably want you to have some tests made. Regrettably, this is going to cost some money. I don't know any way around it. But what you're describing is not sort of normal litter box problems. I mean, the normal things I would say is absolutely, lots of cats are very picky about where they go. It's sort of the upside, right? Except there's a downside. I would look at the litter you're using. I would look at the box you're using. I would get more boxes. I would be sure you're cleaning up scent. So that's sort of all the standard litter box thing. Most litter boxes, most cats, well, let me put it this way. If your cat just uses one litter box and has always used just one litter box to pee and poop in and has never had any problems, you're actually in the minority. Most cats are pickier. They're very picky about the litter. They're picky about the box. Some of them are too high. They want more than one box. They want them in different places. So that's you can just go online, really, honestly, and sort of Google just dealing with the box itself. But I'm also really curious about this physiology and the medical issues related to this cat. So I'm sorry, I can't fix it, but that is some directions for you to go.
Yeah, I was thinking about one of my own cats, Coco, who had started doing that all over the house, and it was a urinary issue. It cost a little money to get it resolved, but it's he actually got better, he uses a very specific wet food that is vet prescribed
for urinary issues,
and he doesn't do it anymore.
Okay,
I mean it took I was just beside myself because he was going all over the house. And
it's not a small problem. It's really hard when you're having to deal with it.
He would go and poop in the litter boxes, but he was peeing all over the house.
Well, good luck. Our paws are all crossed for you and your bank account.
Yes.
Sorry.
Julie in Apex, North Carolina. Julie, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. First, I wanted to congratulate you on your upcoming retirement. I was actually a student of yours in ag journalism many years ago.
That's a long time ago. Yeah, Julie.
Yeah.
Well,
and Patricia, I love your ideas and positive training and everything. I'm on your website and
have
utilized a lot of the methods. I work in veterinary medicine as tech. I love rescue pups and kitties and stuff, but the challenges, they always come with interesting things that you don't always know. And so I'm working now with a rescue that we estimate around 2 years old, and she definitely knew people, but she otherwise had no structure.
Okay.
She's really smart. She's, learned house training. She's just passed her canine good citizen.
Yay.
So she's coming along. She also, though, has some skin stuff. So, things that I would have had be very comfortable by this point with most dogs, touching feet, nail trimming, different things like that, have been kind of delayed in that we're working very slowly to allow that touch and have it be positive and everything. But because of some of the skin stuff, she's also a lot more, reactive in different ways.
Okay.
And so I'm just kind of looking for different strategies that, that you've used, especially when you don't know where they've come from, or pretty much estimate that, if I had started a puppy, I'd be, massaging its toes each day and weekly trims
of course.
Different things. But With her, it's different. I've come quite a ways with her,
good.
But I'm still trying to find some of those.
To get that final step in.
Yeah, I do. I do have an idea for you, Julie, because obviously you're very experienced, right? You've got lots of time and experience under your belt. You've obviously done wonders for this dog. So here's something that might help you bring another step farther along. And it may be that never she turns into that dog that she would have been, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean you can't make things better. So here's one of the things that is really hot in my field right now, which is learning to treat animals, to do husbandry on animals, giving them autonomy, giving them agency, asking them their permission. So I'll just give you a quick example of my dog Skip, the 9-year-old border collie. He has something called PANIS. It's a horrible eye disease. It's an autoimmune disease, and it leads to permanent, untreatable blindness.
Oh.
If you do not put a strip of ointment, not a drop, but a strip of ointment, you have to touch it to his eyeball. And I had to get that in him really fast because it was starting and it was scary. And in literally a couple of days, I taught him to happily let me do it. And the way I did it is to give him permission. So let's take your girl here. So I'm just going to make up a body part. Okay. Mm-hmm. So dogs don't like their paws touched, right? That's a lot of dogs don't like their paws touched. So you're going to sort of put your hand out and you're just going to touch her paw in a way that you might need to. Let's make it easier. Let's just say you're going to just touch the top of her shoulders and you're going to like reach towards it, treat, reach towards it, treat, reach towards it, treat. In front of you is a bucket of treats, right? Or some indication to her that there's a lot of food right there. So what you want her to do is called a bucket game. You want her to be looking at these treats. And if you touch her back and she's looking, as she keeps looking at the treats, you give her a treat instantly. Good, give her a treat. Good, give her a treat. If she turns her head away and is like, no, 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 you can't touch my back, you withdraw your hands, you sit back a little bit, you go, okay, I'll wait till you're ready. And then you start again. You can look this up online. Look up The Bucket Game by Chirag Patel, P-A-T-E-L. It's a wonderful, wonderful way. It's the same way they are doing husbandry on rhinoceri. And Larry's daughter is probably using those exact methods. She's working with giraffes and soon to be elephants. I'm so excited for Emily. Anyway, so that's the idea. Look up Chirag Patel, P-A-T-E-L, The Bucket Game. And it will teach you how to use this method. You can go a long way pretty fast if you're observant and you're patient.
Yeah, and Emily does use that.
Of course, yeah. It's the rage because it's so effective. It works so well.
Yeah. Julie, good luck, and thank you for calling. Cheryl in Iron Ridge, your turn. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, we're really going to miss you, Larry. That's all I got to say.
Me too.
Thank you.
But anyway, I have a solution for the gentleman that called up about the two dogs that get into it with each other. When my husband was alive and we lived in Conover, we had four dogs and four cats. And when we first married, he had a yellow lab, and I had three golden retrievers. And that yellow lab and one of my golden retrievers hated each other.
Okay.
We got married, and we were faced with, now what do we do? I'm marrying a guy whose dog hates my dog, but I love him.
Right.
So we were not take to the shelter people. We were not give up our animal people. We kept our animals until the day they took their last breath. And so we had to come up with solutions. And believe me, that lab could take a chunk out of your hand when she would chase Corey. And Corey was my son's dog, which made it even worse.
So what did you do?
We played the door trick. We had four dogs, and three at any one time always got along. The three Goldens always got along, and the yellow lab got along with two of the three Goldens. So we had door, what's behind the door? If Jesse was behind the door and Corey was on the other side of the door, we took Jesse into another room and shut the door. And it worked. We never had any more fights. And yes, it was a little bit difficult, but we loved them until the day they took their last breath.
I'm not following this. I'm old, let's just say. I'm old. My brain is old. I'm semi-retired,
too. So you had the dogs one dog that bit, let's say, and the other dog that didn't, and you put them on opposite sides of a door.
And then you opened a door, and?
We would put one of the two dogs in a room and let the other three dogs out of that room. And then when we let them outside, we put three of the dogs out, and we incorporated the ones that got along. So we kept the two that hated each other away. And even our kids, the boys, knew which dogs not to put together.
Got it. Okay. I'm so glad that worked for you. I don't see how it would work with somebody with two dogs, but I'm so glad that worked for you. You know, dogs are individuals, right? They're so different, and there are all kinds of approaches. I love that you found one and that it didn't involve harsh punishments. Yay for you. I don't know if that would translate to the two dog story, but who knows? Anyway, so thank you for telling us your story and congratulations.
Yeah, good for you, Cheryl. Thank you for calling. Mark in Wisconsin Dells, your turn.
Yeah, I think we got a good signal now, I hope.
Yes.
Okay. So my thinking was stimulated when you were talking about positive reinforcement, because I've had my students use that on professors they had problems with. And there was a fellow that wrote a book all about this in 1939 called Dale Carnegie.
Yes.
And the book, I think, was called How to Win Friends and Influence Puppies. Isn't that right?
Or people.
Puppies, people, right. One of those.
They still sell a million copies of that a year. And the mystery is, how did Shakespeare know about this 500-600 years before? Because Polonius gave this course to Laertes in Act 1, Scene 3 of Hamlet. I thought you'd find that interesting.
I love that reference. I absolutely adore it. I'm going to have to look that up. I'm going to have to, you know, I'm sure online I can watch the play in its entirety. I love that reference. But, you know, there's also I'm old and my memory's terrible. I don't remember the name, but a very, 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 very long time ago, centuries and centuries ago, there was an expert on horse behavior. And he was arguing exactly the same thing, is be kind. Always think about what your horse needs. Always think about what your horse wants. What's scaring your horse? How can you make your horse feel safe? As opposed to the sort of dominance and harsh. You know, a lot of the harsh dog behavior training actually came after World War I, when it was discovered that the Germans had trained war dogs. And it became a military issue, and they started treating dogs like soldiers in boot camp. So a lot of the sort of harsh punitive methods that people sometimes advocate for, people think like, well, that must be really, really old. But some of them are not. Some of them are relatively new and not motivated by good science.
No. And I wish we could eliminate.
Yes. Well, we'll have Polonius help us out.
Mark,
thank you. Love that reference, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Phyllis in Winona, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Phyllis.
Hello. I was interested in the discussion about cats and their urinary issues. I've had many cats over many years, and I have a couple things related to that might be helpful. As far as cats that are prone to the urinary thing with crystals in their urine, vets have always
well, you know, if they weren't to the point where they needed antibiotics or some kind of treatment, but they always want you to be on this special food, science diet or whatever, which I've always had multiple cats, so there's no way to give one cat a different kind of food. And frankly, I've never had a cat who liked that food.
Yeah, yeah. So, palatability is an issue. It's true.
Exactly. But so I found that the ingredient in at least some of those foods is something called DL-methionine, okay? And you can buy that in tablet forms online. So I buy that, and I crush up a tablet and put it in cat juice, you know, cat food juice.
Sure.
In a syringe, and just squirt the equivalent of one tablet. I have two cats that I do this with. I've been doing it for years.
Fascinating.
And they have not had one of these. They have not had a bladder infection since then. Now, this was not prescribed to me by a vet. It's something I just kind of tried on my own. Well, it has worked fabulously.
Phyllis, that is fascinating. I would, of course, everybody knows what I'm going to say, which is please talk to your vet. Mm-hmm. Everybody who's listening, absolutely talk to your vet about it, because what works in some cats might not work in others. And, you know, that's not my call. I'm not a veterinarian.
Coco loves his food. He eats
Does
it.
He?
Yeah, he loves that food.
Yeah, and that's, yeah.
In fact, he won't eat anything else.
They're all, you know, we're all different, right? Cats and dogs and people, and yeah, we all like different things, but it's not uncommon for some, I mean, in my practice, basically, I know it's not uncommon for some cats and even dogs to not like some of the prescription diets. They are absolutely more expensive. Some of them, in my opinion, should not be prescription. That's fascinating information, and absolutely, if somebody has a cat out there, I would definitely talk to their, that has that same problem, I would absolutely talk to their veterinarian about that. Thank you. Thank you. Very interesting.
Only
on WPR. Only on WPR would we go from Polonius to somebody who understands the biochemistry of her cat's urine related to the food. I love it.
I do too. Thank you very much, Phyllis, for calling. Patricia McConnell, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Tomorrow on the show, we'll get some travel tips for you for traveling wherever you want to go. And he's zeroing in. Glenn Schmidt's written a book that is titled Travel Tips for Older Americans. And so we'll be looking at that tomorrow on the show. Right now, talking with Patricia McConnell about your pet and its behaviors. And Jan in Viroqua has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Jan.
Hi. Hi, Patricia. I have a cat that I am extremely bonded with. He's about 12 years old. And my problem is that when he pats me to get my attention, he does it with his claws out.
Mm.
And since he uses this technique to wake me up in the morning to get fed,
ow.
My scalp is getting clawed, and frankly, it's dangerous to have him that close to my eyes.
Yeah, it is.
So when I had a cat that I had from being a very small kitten, and I had trained him to keep his claws in so I could trust him to rake my face if I leaned over.
Okay.
He never had his claws out. But I'm beside myself because it's really affecting our relationship. And I'm very inconsistent because sometimes when he does it, I'll hit his paw, and other times I'll let him. It's bad.
You're human.
Yeah.
We're shocked. We're shocked, Jan, that you're actually a human. That's one of the things that defines us as a species is that we have a whole range of behavioral potentials in front of us, you know, mm-hmm. which means we're often inconsistent, but also very creative. So a couple of things. One, ow, I'm right. This is a problem. I totally get it. There are a couple of things just in terms of sort of maintenance. One is which to keep his claws very, very well beveled. You know, you can get... you can get all kinds of device. You can get a clipper, but you can also get devices that sort of grind them down. It's not very noisy. You can get a little small one. Go online. You can find them. That does make a lot of noise. It's pretty small that a cat would tolerate. There are actually people who have put little rubber tips on their cats. claws, mm-hmm. but definitely I think keeping them really well trimmed and rounded would make a big difference. The other question is I would not slap his paw because in a way it's almost like you slap me, I'll slap you. I don't know how he's interpreting it, but it's not working. So I would drop that out of your repertoire. Have you tried yelping like you were hurt? Like, oh!
No, I haven't.
What if you try yelping?
Oh! Louder, now, even.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to hurt the engineer's ears out there. But sort of make a seal-like sound, oh! Like AWRP or something. Sounds like an organization. I would try that and then maybe cover your head with a sheet or something, sort of turn away. It's like, oh, I don't want to deal with you right now. That wasn't fun. You could try that. I've done this thing with dogs and I don't know if it would work with your cat or many cats. It works with some dogs and others, but it's basically looking absolutely appalled and horrified. So every once in a while, a relatively sensitive dog, I could do it with my border collies. Like I've done it like twice to each of them, I think, of their entire lives. But they do something, and I really am sort of appalled. And I've gone like, and I look horrified, and I cross my arms, and I turn away, and I look at them like, how could you do that? And you do that to a really sensitive dog, and they're like, oh, what did I do? I'm so sorry. For a cat, they might think it's fun. I don't have any idea. But I would definitely deal with the maintenance issue first, is make it so those claws aren't injuring your scalp in any way. That would be job number one. And then start working on how can you respond in a way that doesn't hurt your bond, that gives your cat the message, I don't want to interact with you if you do that. It's not going to get me up, right? It's going to get you out of the room, maybe.
Jan, good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Let's turn to Gary in Brookfield. Hi, Gary.
Hello. Hi, Larry. I'm going to miss you. I'm 78, and I listened to you all these years since 67.
Oh, man.
Anyways, I'm on my third black standard poodle, and we got her at 8 weeks old when she was 8 pounds. Now she's 6 months and 35 pounds, but she's always itching at her side.
Ooh, ooh. You know?
And I don't know if it's an allergy, but we've had her since we've got her from the breeder up in Eau Claire.
Well, that sure sounds like allergies. What does your vet say?
Well, I've taken it, and they really haven't said much. They said, well, it could be allergies. Give her Benadryl, you know.
I would love you to maybe get a second opinion, maybe pursue that. Allergies are really common in some dogs. Some of them are seasonal. They're summer related. Some of them are food related. So I would ask your veterinarian or ask around. You could always, again, you could talk to a veterinary behaviorist, go to the AVMA website. They have a site where you can do a consult with a vet behaviorist. But basically, I mean, just, you know, if there's nothing you can see there, hopefully she's not injuring herself yet that she scratches so much. I would suggest you get her worked up for, like, what kind of allergy is it? Now, the only other possibility, and there are probably others, but the other one that comes to my mind quickly, Larry, sometimes dogs have a kind of a displacement behavior when they get a little nervous. We do it too. Mm-hmm. Maybe you twirl your hair, right? Maybe you chew on a fingernail, right? There are all kinds of behaviors that many animals do. It's kind of a tick that is just their body's way of trying to soothe themselves. So it's possible that's what it is, but it's much less likely it's that, because that's relatively rare.
Might just
allergies are so common in dogs right now.
Yeah,
so I would pursue that with another veterinarian.
And since he bought it from a breeder, perhaps going back to the breeder
excellent.
To see if maybe.
Absolutely excellent. Yes, thank you, Larry. I would definitely call your breeder because it might be something the line has had problems with. Yeah, yeah, that's a great idea.
And maybe how they dealt with it.
Right.
Yeah. So that's another way to look at it, Gary. Thank you very much for calling. Janice in Antioch, Illinois. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I'm going to miss you so much.
Thank you, Janice.
Well, I'm sending you something eventually, but I'm going to send you something. I have a 30-year-old pony who has learned all kinds of tricks with positive, I guess it would be positive things. She's very food orientated, so I give her teeny tiny bits of carrot, and she has a little bucket that has the top is broken off, and it's just was a dollar at one of the big box stores, and we use that as her treat bucket. And the first treat I taught her, now mind you, I'm not a horse person. I never had a horse before, and this was one of my bucket list things.
Aww.
I'm 86 years old. And I had her now 11 years, and she came from North Dakota to another group, but blah, blah, blah. So we do this trick where we did the clicker method where you give them you click and then give them a treat when they do the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we would do this, and we'd have to do it maybe four times, and she would get it.
And
I would
girl.
Show her tiny piece of carrot in the bucket, and she now has learned to pick up the bucket, and she learned to say yes, no.
I love it.
She picks up her paw.
It's really powerful stuff, isn't it? And you don't have to be a professional animal trainer. It's not rocket science. You learn a couple of basic things, and you can get... You can get dogs to, you know, surf on a surfboard. You can get elephants to roll over. You can get your pony to pick up the bucket, right? Relatively easily. And it's fun, and it's good mental exercise for them. And it's wonderful for us. Yay, Janice, you go, girl, 86, and still playing with your pony. Lucky pony. I love it. I love these stories. It is such a powerful tool once you know how to use it.
Absolutely.
I want Janice, a picture of Janice and her pony.
That would be wonderful. Janice, thank you so much. That was a great story. Well, we're getting up to time here, but we've got maybe time for Martha and Merrill. Hi, Martha.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say that Larry has us well-trained. But I am a dog person completely. But I do love all animals. And I took care of a friend's cat a couple years ago that is in her 20s, his 20s. And they were going on a trip for 2 weeks. And she had two litter boxes, and the cat was just wonderful. And she said he is usually very good about using the litter boxes. And so I'd go every day, and there was never a problem. When they got home a few weeks later, she was complaining to me that he started urinating around the house. And she said, I think he's getting too old, and I may have to have him put down. Because her house had to be spotless, you know, and that's hard to keep that up. So she kept complaining about that, and I finally said, well, what is different? Well, I opened the doors because now it was spring and warmer, if it can be warmer in Wisconsin. And so she said, I opened the doors and the windows to let the fresh air in. And I said, well, where does he urinate? Oh, in front of the doors. I said,
well, you are clearly not just a dog person, Martha.
Martha. Oh, and here we are. We're going to the top of the hour here, Martha, but I love that story.
It's a great story.
She figured out.
Think like a cat.
Figured out the problem and thought like a cat and solved it. Well, Patricia McConnell is going to be with us up until 12:30 today. We will take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on WPR, and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller. So happy to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here with my special guest, Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist. I just shut the mic off so I could sneeze there for some reason. Oh, my gosh. She is a certified applied animal behavior. She's an international speaker, an author, several guides on training and behavior problems. Go to her website, patriciamcconnell.com.
.com, absolutely.
And you're going to find a whole lot of information there about that may well help you with your pet. And you can find out about her books and all of the things that she's got going. Marion Fitchburg has a comment or question. Let's go there. Mary, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a 7-year-old Airedale, and she's a delightful dog, except she has a very, very bad habit, and I don't know how to break her of it, and that is that she loves to steal things, and she runs under a table, and she will usually drop it if I give her a treat, either a piece of small piece of salmon or a dog treat. But I want to be able to get over having to treat her every time.
Right.
Because she needs to be paid.
Yeah, and she's taught you very well.
Right, right. If I steal something, I'll get a treat. But again, what's this woman going to do, right? You know, she's got, you know, Airedales are big dogs, right? Yeah. They're not small dogs. They're smart as whips. You know, when people tell me, my dog is so smart, I always say, I'm so sorry. Because it's not always good, right? So so let's run the tape backwards. So we've got the end of the tape. We got the end of the video. The end of the video is the dog is under the bed or under something with the stolen slipper, and then you lure her out and give her a treat. Let's go back to the beginning. When does this happen? You know, is there any predictability in when it happens or what she steals?
No, she will steal anything. And she, particularly if she knows it belongs to me, so she can find a shoe, that will be delightful. But she will take things off the counter. She will take papers off the counter, and it's any time. So I try to keep the counters, you know, things away from her, but that doesn't always work because of my problem. But no, I can't see any pattern.
So this is a game she's playing. It's what kind of good games does she play? You know, I'm thinking of sort of looking at, I'm trying to look at the big picture here, sort of beyond just like how you fix this one problem, because is she bored? I mean, what is her life like?
No, she goes on, garbage truck just went by. She goes on probably four walks a day at least, and she likes to go on walks, and
okay,
she's friendly to other dogs.
Okay.
But she doesn't really have any particular games. She has some toys that she likes to play with, and I've tried keeping one of those toys and then trying to get her interested in that, but whatever she's stolen is much more valuable to her than a toy.
Okay. Okay. So it's not going to help directly, but indirectly, I would start teaching her some tricks in the house. So she has other things to do in the house to get a treat. And, you know, they're really smart dogs, and I think she might need some mental exercise, more mental exercise. So there's a ton of great teach your dog trick books out there. You can go to dogwise.com. You can just, you know, Google it, good dog trick books. And I would start teaching her a whole bunch of tricks to get her brain busier, because she's just great. Let's play a game, right? Mm-hmm. So start some other games. And I think that might help indirectly. So I would definitely spend a lot of time doing that. I would also, if you can, when I have to be busy and I can't be paying attention, I would have her in another room. Mm-hmm. I would have her in a crate if she's happy in her crate. I would also manage it. You know, professional trainers, we love management. Often people are like, how do I solve this problem? And our answer is like, well, we don't solve it. We manage it because it's, you know, I know how to solve it, but that would take me months of work, and I can manage it with a week of work or something like mm-hmm. that. So I would consider managing it. You know, you're working, you're online, you're on a phone call. You just can't pay attention to her. So when you can pay attention to her, I would first of all, I would work on, as you're watching her, as she goes toward to get something, and if she's in another room, then you should have her in the same room with you, so you can always be watching her. She starts to go get something else, I would have something with me on my person, or I would be ready to run go get it. And I would just create a distraction. I would be like, what's her name? Mary, what's her dog's name?
Scout.
Scout?
Scout? I would like, Scout, Scout! Scout, Scout! And I would call her over, and I would give her a chew toy, or I would give her a treat. I would give her a belly rub. I would, you know what she loves more than anything, right? And then I would probably just say, would you just settle down for a minute? All of my dogs learn settle, which just means just lie down and just stay there for a while. Just cool it. Just cool your jets. So those are some quick ideas. I wish I could be there. I wish I could do a house call because I sort of want to be there. If you need more help, again, get in a professional trainer who knows how to use positive reinforcement. This is absolutely something you can turn around, but I think it's going to take a little work, both sort of in the big picture and also related to management and teaching a different behavior.
There you go, Mary. Thank you very much for calling, and good luck. I hope this works for you.
Smart dogs, I got to tell you, Larry.
The worst.
They're trouble.
Oh, man. Sandy in Madison has a question for us, I believe. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Patricia.
Hi.
I have a question, but I have a quick story I wanted to tell you. I used to have two Shelties and two cats that got along very well until we watched Packer football games. And I'd get very animated during the game. And when I would start yelling, one of the Shelties would run over and start biting one of the cats. No, the only way we dealt with that was the Shelties had to go to Grammys when
the Packers were.
There you go.
You managed.
Again, anyway. Management. Good for you.
I have a Beagle Basset mix who goes to doggy daycare and goes to the dog park and gets along with other dogs until he's on a leash. And then he gets so reactive. He sees another dog and he starts barking and lunging and just turning into a different kind of dog.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And this is not uncommon.
It's not. When they're on a leash, they know they're trapped, right? They don't have that agency I talk about. They don't have autonomy. They can't. And especially the way our world is designed, often we're on a sidewalk and we're sort of forcing two dogs to walk directly at each other, which dogs, would not do. That's not a polite way to greet. It's the opposite of the way we politely greet another primate, right? Hello, Larry, I say, walking straight up to Larry. I'm not going to circle around, not going to sniff your butt either. That would, be awfully rude. I can't believe I said that on the radio, but I just did. So we sort of set them up in a way to be reactive. And so the good news is there are a lot of resources out there for you. This is absolutely something you can turn around. I wrote a booklet called Feisty Fido. You can find it on my website, patriciamcconnell.com. It's about using basically some behavior management, classical conditioning, and operant conditioning to just teach a different behavior. It works really, really well. So Feisty Fido, patriciamcconnell.com. I think it's on sale for like really little money. So jump in there. If you need more help, don't hesitate to get a trainer as a coach. The finest athletes in the world, even after they've won, the U.S. Mm-hmm. Open or Wimbledon or whatever, or the NBA, they still have coaches, right?
Right.
There's nothing wrong with having a coach. So if you find you need more help than what's out there, either in my books or online, then call somebody who uses positive reinforcement and work with them. Because part of it is just sort of physically training you. Dog training is a science, a sport, and an art. And the sport part takes practice because it takes timing. So it's just like every other sport.
Sandy, good luck. And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's take a call from Perry in Oconto next. Perry, hi.
Hello, and hi, Patricia.
Hi. How you doing, Perry?
I love the positive reinforcement. And even a lot of dog trainers that learn the other method, like Robert Milner with retrievers, he definitely went to positive reinforcement and trained a lot of search and rescue dogs.
That's great to hear. It's just so much easier and so much more fun and so much more effective.
My question to you is, now when you have herding dogs and field dogs like spaniels and stuff, if they flush something, they have to get their butt on the ground until they're scent. And I see some of the working shepherd dogs, the herding dogs, they got to lay down and wait for the sheep to kind of move in a certain direction. How do you build on that sharpness or instantaneous movement from a distance with positive reinforcement?
Yeah, that's a great question. And here's, I have a kind of a generic answer for you because you're talking about two different kinds of dogs, two different sports. But here's the key to just about all of making positive reinforcement to work. Remembering that positive reinforcement is what increases a particular behavior of the animal you're working with. They are the one who defines the reinforcement. Example, people will be like, good dog, and pet a dog on the head. And the dog is like squinting his eyes, turning his head away. It's like, I didn't want that now, right? What I wanted was to run to the barn. So with a sheepdog, for example, I'll give you a very personal example. When we got Skip, he was 3.5 years old. He had terrible manners. He would literally run you over to get out the door to run to the barn where the sheep were. That's what he wanted. He wanted to work the sheep. He wanted to see the sheep, and he knew that that was in the barn. So you open the front door, and he would literally, like, run into you. He was just ruder than all get out. He was literally raised in a barn. And so I would ask him to pause. I'd say, Skip, wait and just look at it for 1 second and then say, okay. And then he could run to the barn. And I use running to the barn as his reinforcement. There's a wonderful perspective that the problem behavior is the reinforcement. If your dog wants to dash away from you when he's at a retriever trial, for example, at a field dog trial, or when you're at the post on a sheepdog trial and your dog is beside you and the sheep are being set 300 yards away and your dog has to stay there until everybody's ready and the judge says okay, you do it by asking for a tiny pause and then saying okay, letting them run for the decoy, letting them start their out run for the sheep. So you use the problem as the reinforcement. You just start where they can't lose, and then you build up on it. Make sense?
Makes sense to me. Perry, thank you, and good luck with that. I appreciate your call very much. Let's go to Peter in La Crosse next. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
What's on your mind today?
Well, Larry, I want to congratulate you. I've been listening to you for years, as have so many of the listeners, and I want to congratulate you. And Patricia, I go back to the days with you and Larry on the radio. 3 years ago, I lost my 14-year-old golden retriever. Mm. And she was a wonderful dog. The Frisbee never hit the ground. And whenever I lost a dog before, it'd take me about 6 or 8 months, and we'd go get another one. And this one took me 10 days. I went to the shelter, and there was a dog that had been there. He was listed as feral and untrainable by the previous person that had him. It turns out I'm the fourth person that's had this dog.
Oh, dear.
And just slowly over time, he's gotten better every single day. He is the joy of this dog, and he's the joy of the house, and he is gentle. He's wonderful. Just patience, 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 and like you say, positive reinforcement. And I just want to say, adopt, 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 adopt. Don't be afraid of what it says about the dog. It's probably not right. Just go in and do with the dog what you think is right, and they will love you.
Well, you are a saint. You are a saint. And there are so many, I want to just add on to what you're saying. There are so many animals out there, cats, dogs, you know, and some gerbils and rabbits, and, you know, who knows. But there's so many animals at shelters and humane societies that desperately need homes. Now, I don't think everybody should go and adopt a dog that is labeled as, you know, it's been already to three homes. I think you're a special guy, and I give you so much credit for it. But if you're a first-time dog owner, maybe that's not the dog for you, right? So I think it is smart to sort of think about what you know, what you're comfortable with, how much time you have, what's going to fit into your lifestyle the best. But there are so many wonderful animals out there who desperately need homes. And shelters, you know, shelter workers, they are my saints. They work so hard. It's a hard, hard job. And they deserve so much thanks from us. You know, when I've been on book tour for Away to Me, my novel, and every place I talk, I call the local shelter. I ask some of the staff to come in, and I donate a book to them. I call them up, and I thank them publicly for all of their efforts, because they work really, really hard, and they need our support.
Peter, thank you very much for your work and for calling in. Appreciate it. And Dave in Bluegrass, Iowa, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Patricia. I've had three Siberian Huskies for a long time. Two of them were 11 years old. One is five. The one male had cancer. Mm. He's 11. We had to have him put down last week.
Oh.
My other male, at night, he paces down the hallway between the bedroom and the living room. And when we're up, he keeps going to the places where the other dog would lay while he was sick. And it's just heartbreaking. I don't know if he'll ever get over this, or do you have any idea how long something like this might take for him to...
It's so individual.
Give up.
You know, it could be weeks and it could be months, you know. I so hear you. I've been through it. It is absolutely heartbreaking. You know, you're grieving yourself, right? And then there's this animal you love deeply and dearly who you can't really talk to about it, right?
Yeah.
Some of the things that help, that seem to help anyway, is one, just sort of honoring that need, you know, is don't try and change that behavior. You want to lie where your friend used to lie. That's absolutely fine. Could go over there and sit with him to sort of, you know, be together, the two and, you know, a spirit of you, right? One thing that seems to help eventually is to change routine a little bit. Do something new. You know, think about what he loves. Maybe he loves going on walks. So you would go on a walk in new places, you know, discover new things together. Change your routine. New things can be very stimulating and change neurophysiology, actually. So that seems to help a lot of both people, frankly, and dogs. I mean, you know, all of us who've lost somebody we love deeply, it's when something comes up, you know, their birthday, or we always used to go here with my dad, or, you know, those memories are very, very poignant, but also very strong. So create new memories. Create new memories, you and him doing interesting new things together. And that might help. I think it'll ease the time period of grieving a little bit.
Remember Lila, a dog that Staffordshire that I would care for, I would let Lila decide which direction to go on walks.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd stop and she'd look at me like, which way? And I'd say, well, you pick.
And that's a great thing to do, Larry. And we're, you know, just...
She loved that.
Yeah, she had autonomy, right? She had agency, right? So just with any dog, I mean, Larry's, that's a wonderful thing to do, Larry, and just with any dog, you know. So the more of that you can do, I think the better off your friend will be.
Dave, and thank you very much for calling. And Patricia, I have been told you have a question for me.
I do. I do. You know, we have been talking dogs and cats. Nobody's called in about... Well, there was a pony. I was going to say no horses.
Yeah, a pony.
But I know how much you love cats, Larry, and I know you've had cats forever. So, you know, people call and get advice, right, from people like me and, you know, a lot of your other experts that you have on. You have the great veterinarians on, et cetera, et cetera. So here's my question for you. What do you wish your listeners knew about cats? that they might not. What is it about cats that you wish people understood better?
Ooh, let me think. One thing that just kind of came to mind right away was something I learned about cats and their relationship to other animals. And I read that 96% of the DNA of a cat is shared with a tiger.
Yeah.
96%?
Yeah.
And I have Tiger and Coco, and they will come and Coco in particular will come and sit on my lap and then just stare at me and I will stare back at him, and then I will slowly close my eyes and open them. And
brilliant.
He will do the same.
Brilliant.
Because I think I remember you saying a long time back that that's how they show kind of affection.
Yes, it's, you know, veiling their eyes is a way of saying, I am not a threat to you. I am not stalking you right now.
Yeah.
So they will close their eyelids slowly. Sometimes they'll sort of turn their head, but they avoid these direct stares. So that's hugely important for people to understand. Yeah, they are big cats and little cats. They're all cats.
The safety issue is always on my mind. So chocolate, onion, garlic,
some kind of flowers, right?
Certain kinds of flowers, and I just hope that if somebody gets a cat for the first time, that they will look at those things that could be a danger to the cat.
So important.
And then manage that.
And kittens, you know, you're making me think of a friend of mine. This is her daughter just got a puppy. And it was like, oh, the puppy's so much trouble. I should have gotten a kitten. It was like, yeah, well, kittens. Kittens can do vertical. Kittens can crawl up drapes. Puppies can't. They're a lot of work. And they love to chew on electric cords, right?
Yes.
Got to be careful with that.
Patricia, it's been a pleasure.
All these years
together. Well, we won't be meeting on the air again, but we will, I'm hoping.
Oh, I'll stalk you. I'll find you, Mueller.
And Patricia will come back, and she will be talking with Lee next time around.
I would love to. It would be my honor.
Patricia McConnell, Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist, International Speaker. Go to her website. Take a look at it. She's got some wonderful things there and a blog as well. PatriciaMcConnell.com is the place to go. Coming up, we're going to turn our attention to end-of-life concerns for your pet. Dr. Carrie Donahue coming back to be with us once more. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. The death of a beloved dog, a cat, or other pet can be heartbreaking. I've experienced it, and I bet you may have as well. But knowing how to care for an animal nearing the end of its life is important. And on the show today, we're going to be talking about those difficult decisions with Dr. Carrie Donahue back with us once again. Carrie is the owner of A Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Hospice and Euthanasia. That's a big title.
That is a big title. Yes, it is. I do a lot of those things.
She does indeed. Works out of the Madison area.
That's right.
And provides holistic and alternative pet care. And if you have lost a pet recently, you know that experience. Maybe you could talk about what that experience was like for you. And we'd love to hear from you as we talk with her about how she helps so many people when it comes to an end-of-the-life decision for their pet. And you can join in. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. You know, somebody was asking me, I wonder how Dr. Carey got into this. You were a practicing bat, and still are a practicing bat.
That's right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But how did you get into this side of things?
That's a good question, and something that I never really saw myself getting into when I was in vet school. When I was listening to you and Tricia on the air calling all pets, that got me through vet school and provided so much good information on pet behavior. I can't even tell you. So anyway, but really. When I first started practicing in a clinic, the first clinic I was at, one of my clients asked me to come to her home to euthanize her dog. And it was really out of the blue for me. It was something that I didn't really realize that veterinarians did. So this was back in 2009, 2010, when I first started out. And I went to her house and I euthanized her pet, the client and patient that I had known for a long time, and I realized what a beautiful experience that was. And so ever since then, I've offered home euthanasia to my clients and patients, and it's kind of turned into a full-time career for me at this point, and it's a big, big part of what I do.
And you, of course, you're in Madison, so I assume you have many clients in Madison.
Madison is, yeah, big dog and cat town. It almost seems like everyone has a pet in their household. So I'm kept pretty busy, and I provide services in about an hour and a half radius from Madison. So do a lot of traveling, house calls only. So just going into people's homes and helping their pets at the end of life.
In so many instances, for a pet, going to the vet can be a traumatic experience every single time, even
Absolutely.
Though they've done it their whole life.
Oh, I know. I know. And that's what I think. Going into a clinic at the end of life for that euthanasia appointment can oftentimes make a difficult time even harder. And so if we are able to provide care in home where a pet is more comfortable, that, I think, is such a gift to be able to give. Even the car ride into the clinic is so hard to do. So this makes things a little bit easier. You know, for pets, really not many good things happen at a vet clinic. So, you know, it's easy to see why it would be a distressing and stressful situation for them to go at that time.
So you offer different types of end-of-life options for people, do you not? Or?
Yeah, well, the main thing that I provide is the in-home euthanasia, but also a really big part of it is talking to people through these situations and providing hospice care, providing palliative care support, and really giving people ideas and support and comfort at that time so that they can make the best decisions for their pets.
So when you talk about hospice care, give us some examples of that.
Yeah, hospice care is really providing comfort care to pets when you know that they're either faced with a terminal illness or they're at a point in their lives where they're facing difficulty and you know that things aren't going to get better for them, but you're not ready to make that final decision for them, but you want them to be comfortable and you want them to be able to enjoy the days that they have left. So a big part of hospice care is providing pain and comfort support for them. And there are a lot of different ways that that can be done, and that's what we spend a lot of time talking to people about.
And then you can provide that. Maybe it's medication.
Maybe it's medication. Maybe it's pain medication. Maybe it's something like alternative medicine. Acupuncture is wonderful. Massage, laser therapy, chiropractic care, all of those things can come into play at this time. And that's what we talk to people about, and we provide some of that. And we also refer people back to their primary veterinarian if they're able to provide those things.
Wow. Dr. Carrie Donahue, our guest, it's great to have her with us today as we talk about end-of-life pet care. And I hope you'll join in. Maybe you have an experience to share or a question. Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk at WPR.org. Sarah emailed to say that Dr. Carrie provided end-of-life care for her beloved cat in April, and your compassionate care gave Sarah's family a beautiful experience for which they are grateful.
Oh, my gosh. That is so nice. That is so meaningful to hear. Thank you so much for writing in. That means everything to me.
What other ways do you help and support the pets and their people?
Mm-hmm.
Go through the process a little more.
Oh, okay. A lot of times people will either call or email or text us. And I would encourage any of your listeners, if they're faced with kind of these end-of-life decisions, to not hesitate to reach out to myself, my team. I work with a wonderful veterinary technician named Autumn, and she does a lot of counseling for people. She's certified in grief care and support. So we provide kind of support to pet owners before the process and also after the process. So kind of talking through what things they might be seeing with their pets and what they might be able to do to provide that comfort. And if they're not able to do anything, then kind of coaching them through the end-of-life process.
And you, even to the point, I think you care for the animal after it's passed. And so, I mean, provide yeah.
Oh, absolutely. We provide cremation services to pets afterwards, too. So we can transport pets to the cremation facility, and we offer all of that as well. And if people need support, I mean, going through something like that, it's so heartbreaking. And a lot of times you're able to hold it together for your pet before and during, but then after, it really starts to, you know, hit you, and you can go through a really difficult time. So that's what we're there for as well, providing that grief support.
George in Janesville has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, George. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm wondering what it costs. A lot of people can't afford veterinary care today, and it sounds like this is unfortunately a service just for the wealthy.
Oh, that it's really available to everyone, and we provide a lot of different options that make it accessible to everybody that needs it. You can choose to just have the service, the home euthanasia, or like I said before, too, you can always call us and just kind of talk through if you need help just making that decision. And we go steps further and provide the cremation, and that does add on costs, but we really try to make it accessible for anybody who desires to be in home with their pet at the end of life, that they are able to do that.
Yeah. George, thank you for calling. You can join in, too. Maybe you've got an experience to share about your own pet or a question about your pet. Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234. You could email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks so much for joining in today as we talk about difficult pet care decisions with Dr. Carrie Donahue, owner of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Hospice and Euthanasia, works out of the Madison area, probably within an hour's drive of Madison. She will help you out when it comes to your end-of-life concerns for your pet. Again, the number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Stan had a question about the knowing if your pet is in really serious pain. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard to figure that out.
Oh, it's the hardest thing. And I think a lot of times pets don't want us to know that they're struggling, and they don't want us to know that they're in pain. And they put on this front because in their mind, you know, they're our protectors and it's their job to take care of us. So they don't want us to know that they're struggling. So they try to hide it. And that's also just an instinct that they have. So it is difficult to know when a pet is in pain. But they do show us different signs that we can watch for so that we can kind of get an idea if they are painful. Of course, watching them move around. Are they having difficulty lying down or getting up when they are sleeping? Are they having difficulty doing stairs or jumping up? That's a big sign that they might be painful. Is their appetite starting to go down? That's another one that we see, and that can be a sign of pain. A lot of times if they're struggling with pain, they're not as likely to eat a full meal, and they might not be as likely to interact with us or be so willing to go on a walk or snuggle with us and really kind of all of the things that you've seen in your pet that they love to do and their normal behaviors. If some of those start to change as they get older, a lot of those can be indicators that your pet is painful. And luckily, like we talked about before, there are a lot of things that can be done to help with pain. There are a lot of great medications out there and different therapies. However, at the end of life, it typically comes to the time where pain is not able to be controlled by medications or by different therapeutics. And that's when you really have to start thinking about making the decision.
Stan in De Pere has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Stan.
Yeah, hi. I had a 10-and-a-half-year-old golden doodle named Max, and he died on the operating table the Sunday before Father's Day. And just want to briefly share, he was totally healthy. Never sick a day in his life. Had no idea he was sick. Tons of energy, eating well, affectionate, no problem. And then he woke up in the morning on Sunday, couldn't even get on his feet. Wouldn't eat anything. He would drink a little bit of water if I brought him the dish, but literally, I thought he must have had a stroke or something. Mm-hmm. And since it was a Sunday, there's no vets open. My vet wasn't open. Nobody was open. Right. So finally, I found one 24-hour place in Appleton. So bundled him up in the car, carried him to the car, hauled him down to the emergency. The only one within probably 100 miles that was open. And did an ultrasound, and vet came in and said, well, there's a large hidden tumor between his spleen and his liver that burst. And she says, you have two options. We could put him down, you know, right now. She goes, there's probably about a 75% chance it's a cancer, but there's a 25% chance it's not cancer. She goes, or we can go in and do emergency surgery right now. It'll be $8,000. What do you want me to do? Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, I looked her in the eye. So, well, if this was your dog, what would you do? Mm-hmm. And she said, well, she goes, it's interesting. This is basically what just happened to my dog. And I went in there and we tried to take care of it. He still passed away. So I pulled out my credit card. I said, do whatever you need to do. You know, I promised my dog I'd take care of him. So you do it. And, so he went in there. It was worse than they thought on the mm-hmm. ultrasound. Mm-hmm. It had burst, and he was bleeding faster than they could give him new blood. Mm-hmm. Right. So she literally called me up from the operating table. She says, "Well, we're not going to be able to save him. Do you want me to put him down?" Well, I go, "Well, what's the alternative?" She goes, "There really isn't one." So mm-hmm. put her down, and then I didn't want him cremated, so I brought him home and buried him mm-hmm. With a ceremony and all that fun stuff. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really hard because, you know, you love your dog to death. Did I do the right thing? I don't know what I honestly don't. I think I did the right thing.
Oh, you absolutely did the right thing. And I am so sorry for your loss. And it makes it almost harder because there was no warning. You just didn't know. And it happened so suddenly. And you had to make all of these decisions in the difficult heat of the moment. But you absolutely did the right thing by your dog. And that's all that matters. That is all that matters. And following, you know, the advice that you were given by the veterinarian, you couldn't have made another choice. So you did right by your dog, and I am so sorry for your loss.
I am as well, Stan. And I agree with what Dr. Carey just told you. You did the right thing. And thanks again for calling. Bob in Kokana will give you a chance. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Hi, Larry. And by the way, Larry, we're going to miss you.
Thank you.
You're leaving. And it's a suggestion I wanted to maybe run by your guest. The last dog I had, she was going downhill, and then one day she was just in extreme pain. And I called the vet, and they couldn't get me in till the afternoon. And I said, well, how about some tranquilizers or some, you know, whatever they give a dog. Mm-hmm. And I went and picked up a few pills. And to have her put down. And I'm thinking if I ever have to take another dog in, I would ask for that medication first, mm-hmm. which really calmed the dog down. What mm-hmm. are your thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that is actually a good idea. And, you know, that kind of makes you think how, and I try to say this too, how important it is to plan ahead. Mm-hmm. And you know that your dog is getting older. You know that they might be starting to fail in different ways. As much as you can to try to think about how you might want the end of their life to be, talking to your vet about potentially getting some of those medications, some of those either anti-anxiety or really strong pain medications. So if you are faced with a dog in the middle of the night or in the morning that's not able to get up and you're not able to have them seen right away, you have those resources and you kind of have a plan in place. And if you're not able to see anyone, you can at least provide pain relief so that they're calm and they're comfortable until you are able to get them seen.
Bob, thank you very much for calling. Anne in Medford, your turn. Hi, Anne.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. And that last question was point on for what I'm looking for. But just a little bit further. So I'm a relatively new pet owner who has an older dog. She's about 14-year-old border collie who has very a lot of hip arthritis. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, you know, how do I know about when the end of life is near? I'm what kind of signs would I look for? Because I don't know if I know if she's in pain or not.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, and this, it's the hardest thing, and especially if you are a new pet owner, you might not have gone through this before. And yeah, a lot of people will say, oh, you're going to know when it's time. They'll tell you when it's time. And I think there is truth to that, but you really have to pay attention for the signs that they give you. And you said there is arthritis there. I think probably the biggest thing would be the mobility. And if it gets to the point where your dog is having difficulty getting up, like the caller ahead said, when his dog wasn't able to get out of bed, I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons I get called to do end-of-life care. It's because the pet isn't able to get up. So, of course, that would be something to watch for if you're kind of, if your dog is trending towards that. And the other difficult thing at this time is that there are so many ups and downs. They could have one day where they're not able to get up. They just sleep all day. And you think, okay, well, maybe it's time. I should start looking into this. And then the next day they jump up and they eat a full meal and they're running around. And that's what can really make this difficult. I think it's important kind of when you're at that with a 14-year-old dog, when you're at that point, starting to keep track of good days and bad days. And that can make such a difference because when you're in the moment with them, you might have a bad day and the next day might be good and you forget all about that bad day. If you can keep track of over a week's time, over a month's time, if the bad days are outnumbering the good days, then it's time to kind of make that plan, get that plan in place for end-of-life care. One thing I want to mention, there is an app and it's called HOSPET. H-O-S-P-E-T. And that helps owners with kind of quality of life and making the decision and keeping track of those good days and bad days. And you input the information and you can go back and look at it and at any time and kind of see how many good days there have been and what the trend is for your pet.
Oh, and what's the name of that again?
It's called HOSPET.
Hospet.
H-O-S-P-E-T. So it's a newer app that I just found, and I thought it looked really great.
You know, I was talking to Dr. Bill Stork, who's a veterinarian in Lake Mills, and he was telling me about a dog that was, you know, going to die, and mm-hmm. it had very bad days, but then it would have a good day, but then it'd have very bad days. And the end was getting near, mm-hmm. and he asked the owner, and the owner said, well, not today. And then she brought the dog in, and the dog was having a good day.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, that's the day.
That's the day. Isn't that, it's so powerful, and it's something that I really think is important because you do have those ups and downs. And I think when you start to notice that the downs are getting lower, they're getting harder for your pet to come out of, and those good days are getting less and less, that's when it's, you can make that decision on a good day when they're feeling good, when they are themselves. When they're 100% themselves and they're interacting and they're enjoying you and they're enjoying their life, I really think there is truth in that, that that is the day to make the decision so that there are no more bad days.
Carrie, I understand you have a question for me.
I do. All this talk about pets. So my question to you is, now that you're retiring and you will presumably have more spare time, will you be welcoming any more pets into your life to take up that time?
Well, I have two cats right now, Coco and Tiger, and they're getting up there in age.
They are, right? How old are
18.
They? 18. Oh, my goodness, Larry. Wow.
And so I don't want to bring another...
No, you're right. Yes.
Pet into the, but if there's a time when they're both gone,
mm-hmm.
I would even be thinking about a dog. I cared for our dog sat Lila, who's a Staffordshire, an older dog. Mm-hmm. And I think at some point I would like to have a dog like mm-hmm. Lila, mm-hmm. An older dog. And I think I'd really enjoy that.
Oh, I bet you. I bet you would, and I bet they would.
Yeah. And you have pets of your own?
I do. I have two Australian cattle dogs, and they, you know, but it's always in my mind. Oh, could we take in a third dog? You know, there's always room for one more, but oh my goodness, they have a lot of energy, so they keep me busy and they bring me up on those down days for sure.
Well, that's the same way with Tiger and Coco. They can be, sometimes I can get irritated with them,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but most of the time, you know, when I go to bed at night, one's on one side and the other one's on the other side to begin the evening, and then he crawls over me. And usually about the time I'm just falling asleep.
That's what they do. They can sense it right when you're about to fall asleep, and then they make their move and they get comfortable, and then it all starts.
He goes over and Coco climbs over me, usually around my head, and walks over to Tiger and sits down, and they sit together overnight. So.
Isn't that special? And, you know, that's one of those things because, like you said, they're getting older, so you're going to be faced with some of these decisions, hopefully not anytime soon. But if you can always, in a really dark time, bring some lightness into it and remember those things that they do, the laughter that they bring to us, the joy, all of those wonderful memories, that's what it's all about.
Carrie, it's been a pleasure over these years. We've done this together for a long time, and I want to thank you so much for being with us for one last time with me. I hope you'll come back and be with Lee.
I would love to, but Larry, it's been such a privilege. I've enjoyed every minute of it. Thank you so much for this and for everything that you've done for all of us who are listening. It's been a good run.
Dr. Carrie Donahue, our guest, owner of and founder of Full Circle Holistic Veterinary Care in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller.